Hi, we're Karina and Sarah, two best friends who've joined together to bring you conversations that explore the intertwined roles that mind, body, heart, and soul play in the story of your life. Together, we bring our passion for understanding life, here and beyond, into conversations that take a deep dive into what it is to live this human experience from the soul. We combine my decades of journalistic investigation and storytelling with Sarah's decades of investigating the human heart as a cardiac imaging specialist. Throw in a rare life-threatening disease and a near-death experience and the insights and wisdom gained from these, and you get soul-to-soul conversations. We invite you to come along as we unpack life and navigate our way along the journey. We'll explore life lived from the inside out and empower you to live your authentic life, a life of true meaning and purpose, one that is aligned with your heart and soul. Welcome back to Soul Conversations. I'm Karina Machado.
And I'm Sarah Jane.
Thank you so much for joining us again today. We are so excited to be back, and we remembered that we hadn't toasted our debut episode, so...
We're prepared this time.
We're prepared, so...
So we are toasting.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And cheers to you for joining us. Thank you.
Just for champagne.
So today, we, as promised at the end of last interview, our last conversation, our first episode, we said we would talk about Sarah's near-death experience, and that's a topic very close to our hearts because it's how we met. And Sarah's NDE, which was an extraordinarily profound multi-layered experience, has the benefit for me personally of bringing us together. And for that, I'm very grateful.
Me too.
Very grateful. So, so we're going to talk about that. And one of the things that Sarah shares that is, I think, really especially insightful for the way we live our lives today is what the near-death experience can offer us in terms of everyday wisdom that we can draw on to live more fulfilled lives from the soul. So we'll go into all of that, but we thought we might also start by just sharing a little bit about the near-death experience, which has become this huge phenomenon in recent years.
Because I think I didn't know what an NDE was. So there's maybe people listening who haven't got a clue what we mean by an NDE or a near-death experience.
Exactly.
But it's not a new term.
It's not a new term, no. It's from it. So I've got the book here. So Sarah owns this book. This is the 40th anniversary edition of Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody. And he is a psychologist. Psychologist or psychiatrist, I'm very sorry, doctor, if I've got that wrong, but who documented near-death experiences in the 1970s and kind of didn't know what he was sitting on when he began to do it. And it's so he sort of coined, he actually did, not sort of, he coined the term near-death experience. However, the phenomenon itself goes back to at least the 4th century when Plato talks about a man who, in this account that he shares, sounds very much like he had a near-death experience. So it's not a new thing. However, the near-death experience as we know it dates to around the mid-1970s. But
new to me.
Yeah, well,
new to me.
One of the things that was amazing about your story was that prior to your experience, you had no familiarity with that term.
I'd never heard it. Never heard it. Didn't even cross my mind to look into anything beyond death. Being medically trained, you know, scientific medical world, it just was not even in my sphere of it being something that I would entertain of interest or to look into. I now look back and think that's quite weird, but anyway.
Well, it just, to me, it makes your account even more fascinating, you know, because it was such an alien part of your life. Like, you literally had no concept of it. So this is something very fascinating, I think, that you didn't have a concept of it.
No, I didn't. And I just touching on what you said a bit earlier in the introduction to the episode, I think I feel for myself personally coming back after an NDE, it's actually quite a challenge to reintegrate back into the physical human experience. And it's actually taken some time to just really let the experience sit with me. And in the last few years, that's what's probably been the most profound thing for me, is what can dying and come back teach us about the living? And that's how I'm integrating it into my life number two. And that's probably what was behind a lot of our first ideas and concepts of chatting to one another in a more formal platform of a podcast, was there's so much here that can help us all just really anchor into the wisdom and insights, not only my own, but of others' experiences. And I think that's what another thing we were talking about earlier is a few experiences are just that. But now we have tens of thousands of other people explaining their experiences of a near-death experience. And that becomes data now. And I think that's where we're at. It's been a long time since this book was published. Yep. And in those decades, as with medical advancements and people being revived and coming back, we now are really collating a whole lot of data.
Yep.
And I think that can help us all. And I'm brave enough to try and step into that space, I hope.
Well, on that note, why don't we get from Sarah the foundations of her near-death experience, and I guess touching on, you can touch on what you learned from it. But let's start from the get-go. Yeah. What happened?
So I guess because we've spoken quite a few times on your podcast, Spirit Sisters, we've actually done three interviews that have really delved into
the nuts and bolts of the experience.
I can't believe we've done three interviews on it, but we've really delved into it. So I probably won't go as deep into it, and we'll just refer back to those at the end of the episode.
We'll link to those,
However, to make it as concise and as succinct as possible. Oh my goodness, Polly, the cat. Sorry, everyone. We've got animals everywhere. We've got Winnie, my dog, sitting next to me here. I don't know if everyone can see her tucked in there. We've got
everyone. What I love is that Polly didn't knock over the champagne. She didn't, thank you, like, Polly.
Thank you, sweetheart. So, yeah, we've got the whole family here. Actually, I've had two near-death experiences. Yes. And the first one was back in 2002, and I had delivered my second baby and had a broad ligament hematoma, which basically means I bled out internally and was taken to theatre, and I'd lost all my blood volume. I actually was aware of, in that circumstance, I had was aware of my body as it was crashing and was observing it from above, watching the blood pressure crash, listening to the surgeon and then anaesthetist, watching the whole episode unfold. And it was a very quick episode, quick near-death experience compared to the second one. And I now look back at it as a primer for what was to come. Maybe I didn't see it through that lens at the time. I was aware that I was clinically dead, and then from above was aware of the presence of my grandfather who had passed, and him communicating to me, it's not your time, you have to go back. And as soon as that was said, I was back on the operating table and revived and survived the surgery. I didn't give it much thought. I think I shut it down. I was very sick after the surgery, and I was always thought if I said something, I would be looked at as if I was crazy. So I just shut it down and went back to life.
I think a lot of near-death experiences can relate to that. Thinking now I'm not going to speak.
Now I can't believe that I thought like that. But at the time, I think working in the medical field, especially in cardiac specialty, I guess I'm probably ashamed to say it, but I guess I was worried about judgment, about what I might be saying about what happens after we die. Mm. So fast forward to a little bit later, to 2018, and I was close to, just trying to think, 8 years into a really rare life-threatening autoimmune disease. I'd had a year of chemo, basically was failing chemo and sent home basically to wait out to see if we could get experimental treatment. If not, that's it.
Sent home
to die, basically. And that was the setting for my second near-death experience. I will say that I knew the morning that I woke up that it was my last day. And I can't tell you how I knew, but I knew. I had a knowing that I was not going to be here tomorrow. And I spent that day like I had spent many of them in the weeks and months before, but bedbound. I couldn't care for myself. I couldn't look after myself in any means, but I drank it all in. I may not have been outside experiencing the outside world, but I drank in what mattered, and that was moments with my children, moments with my then husband, and telling them what I thought was important that I would say to them if I was there for when they got married, or 21st birthday or 18th birthday, and I probably wasn't able to do it to the capabilities that I would have done it if I was healthy, but I remember that's how I was living that day. I was in a lot of pain. I had meningitis, so cognitive function was quite limited in that. When you're in that much pain, you can't really, you can't really think. It's really hard to think through the pain. But I was aware as the night went on and the children went to bed of my body shutting down. And it was like, I think I've explained it before, it was like someone going around a house and switching all the light switches off as you go to bed at night and you shut the house down to sleep. It was like someone going through my body and just switching all the light switches off. And the moments before I was aware that I was out of my body, I was aware that all the pain that I was in dissipated and it was taken from me, it was gone. And I had moments of not being in excruciating pain and moments of calm and moments of feeling at peace. And I was aware of my energy leaving my body. For me, this might sound unusual, I felt my body, my energy leaving my body through my feet. I don't know if everyone experiences like that. Probably not. Everyone has a different account. But for me, that's how it happened. I was aware, again, as the first NDE, that I was above my body at around like ceiling height and looking back at my body with no attachment. It was as if I was viewing anything. There was no, which is now when I think about it, we have attachment to us, like we have attachment to our identities, we attach very strongly to who we are and what we represent.
However, that is something that I have heard many other near-death experiences report, a kind of neutral, oh, look at that, you know, not the attachment that is me. There seems to be sort of this innate understanding that is not me. Not the real me.
And I do think on reflection that was very similar to the first time.
Yeah.
I wasn't distressed. I just was not distressed either time that I was looking at a body that was no longer physically viable both times. And you would think you would be distressed about it. But I wasn't. What struck me was I'm existing. That body may not have no breath, no consciousness, no mind consciousness left, but there is a consciousness that's existing, and I feel just like me. The me that I would have felt we would say belongs to the physical body. my personalities, my characteristics, who I am, what I would laugh at, what I would find funny, how I think, even though obviously I don't have a brain or mind to be thinking with, I was still thinking, still having conscious awareness or thought processes that were not of my mind, but were exactly the way I was thinking in that human body that was Sarah. Exactly how I think about things. I was curious. I'm curious about everything. That's how I was. I was curious. I'm existing. That's a really curious thing to think about. And how am I existing? And how am I conscious when there is no consciousness left in, and I'm no longer in that body? And I was also very aware of the fact that even though I'm viewing my body, I still felt exactly how I feel now in this body, meaning I feel like I have physical legs, arms, body form, like a physical form about myself, even though I'm viewing it below me.
Yeah.
And now I've come to think of it much like a phantom body, in that when we read accounts of phantom limb pain, when amputees still experience the sensation of pain, or that they still have an arm or a leg even though it's been amputated, I think it's much like that.
Yeah.
It's like a hangover effect of the body you've been wearing. Possibly. I don't have all the answers. My little theories. I just know I felt like me. I felt like I was exactly how I was in every other day of my life. Only I was looking at that I left behind, or I was leaving behind. I was aware of, I don't want to say pull, but I was aware of like an anti-gravity drawing me, is probably a more accurate term to use. And I'd say through the ceiling, but the ceiling was no longer there. And I was being drawn to what my consciousness was now aware of. A beautiful, beautiful, magnificent white light that had no source. Like, I couldn't say where it was coming from, only that I was being drawn to it, and it felt like the most amazing love that one could ever experience. It was thousand times more than anything I'd experienced here in human form, and it was an unconditional, non-judgmental, magnificent love for me. And I knew that love was not to make anything religious, but I had a knowing that love was in my consciousness. It was like that love is God, or that is a divine love, and that's where I've come from, and that's where I go to, and that is what all existence is created from, and that is what I was created from. And I remember feeling like as I got closer to the bright white light, as I felt like I was merging within it, like I'm home. Like I'm home. Like after going on a really long holiday, you come back to your home and you have your favourite cup of tea and your favourite slippers, and you just go, oh, I had a lovely holiday, but I'm home. That's how I feel when I come home from a holiday.
I love that.
Just those things that make you feel familiar. And I guess that's another aspect of the NDE experience, is now that I've been sharing my story or my experience a little bit more, I am aware of, and you you've spoken to many NDE experiences, how varied they are.
They are incredibly varied. And the way I often think of it as somebody that hasn't had a near-death experience that I can recall, it's like, how could you categorize when you go to sleep at night and you have a dream? And those dreams are as unique as every person. Sarah, you've described it as a fingerprint, like we each have our own fingerprint. Like, of course the NDE is going to be as unique as that, you know.
I'm sorry, I don't know if everyone can see my little puppy. How I understand it is that word familiar, that's really important. I think the integration back into the non-physical realm from this physical realm is one that needs to be familiar, because you are leaving an experience that is quite significant, and to be transitioning from that human life back into something which we have had amnesia about. We have been, well, most of us have been cut off from the memory of this place. I think we create our near-death experience, or co-create it with divine love and with consciousness, much like we create our days here.
Yeah.
And Karina and I and all of you, we all have a day that we live. We'll eat breakfast, we'll eat lunch and dinner, we'll go to work, we'll watch a movie, we might go and swim in the ocean. We all live that day differently, how we would like to have it. I might have toast for breakfast and you might have
yogurt.
A croissant. Yogurt.
I love yogurt.
But we both had breakfast. We both had the experience of breakfast, even though they were different breakfast. We've had the same day, but not the same.
Mm.
And just because they were lived not the same doesn't mean we didn't live that day. I feel the near-death experience is much like that. They are not the same, and they cannot be in everyone, because they are customized for you to be familiar and to help you reintegrate back into the non-physical. And I think part of that is so many experience loved ones who have passed, greeting them or being a part of that process. And for me, my father was very much a part of my near-death experience. He had passed in the March of the year, and my near-death experience was at the end of November. And I had been very sick all year since he passed. And I remembered wondering, while I was going through weekly chemo, I wonder if my dad knows what I'm going through.
Mm.
I wonder if he knows how hard I'm fighting. And that was probably one of the first things that came through when he greeted me, when we met, was he communicated telepathically to me that he knew what I had been through and that he was proud of me. And I found that interesting, because he knew my question and answered it without me asking. Everything's a telepathic communication, and it's like breathing. You don't need to be taught how to breathe when you are born. You just take your first breath.
Mm.
It's much like that. You don't need to be taught how to communicate telepathically. You just know how to do it. You just communicate and you think it, and it's transmitted and it's answered just like that. And that's kind of cool.
I love that. And that is also one of the aspects that, you know, when we talk about the immense variety of near-death experiences, there are common denominators, and one of them is the amazing experience of love, which is very hard to verbalize and to explain. And another is the telepathic communication that it features in so many near-death experiences.
Yeah, they are like the cornerstones of a near-death, or prominent in many, in that, that telepathic. And not just between loved ones. I experienced meeting my guides. I had an extensive life review where you review the life that you have lived, not only from the perspective of you observing,
but of you participating and also you experiencing it from the perspective of others that played out the scene that you're reviewing, and you experience it through feeling. Not like us sitting here watching a movie and it's just an observer. You experience it through the lens of your soul. And that is, you have to experience what the other has gone through from what you are doing, saying, and from the intent of what you are doing or saying to another. And that positive or negative effect, you also get to have the awareness and that expanded perception of how that ripples out throughout their lifetime and the ripple effect on others.
So powerful.
It's so huge. Powerful. And I don't think I ever gave much thought to my intents in life. I don't think I consciously sat down and went, I need to be really aware of what my intents are in everything I say and everything I do.
No, well, most of us don't navigate our lives that way. No. I mean, unless you begin to do this kind of exploration, and then perhaps you do. Yeah. But even then it's difficult.
Yeah, you get lost in your busyness. So, you get lost in your mind.
That's right.
And that's probably something I have come back knowing is really important. Is my intents matter so much? They matter, and they really matter when you're watching your life review. And so now I anchor into them every morning and every night. I wake up and I say my intents, and I try to honour them all day, every day. And I check in with myself at night and I think, maybe I could have done that better. I find myself catching it a lot quicker now. I think it's a training.
Yes.
I think it is a training, a mind training, to anchor into and to have awareness of what are your intents? How do you want to live this life? And it's down to the micro, because it can be like a macro statement. My intents are to do this, to achieve this, or to just be love. And I think the near-death experience flips a whole lot of what we're conditioned to believe are the important things that we achieve or we strive to achieve, that are the headliners of your life. But in the life review, it's quite humbling when you discover it's the small acts of kindness and love that are the headliners.
Yes.
It's the simple, it's the little things.
Would you be open to sharing a memory from your life review that illustrates how it's a tiny little thing that makes such a profound difference?
Maybe I've shared this with you before. It really struck me. Because it was something I didn't even remember. And it was when I was quite young. I probably was around 8. I think I was in third class and at school, and it was the beginning of a year. And I do remember my mother always saying to me, if there's a new girl, don't let her be left out. Don't let her. And thanks, Mum. Good tip. And, you know, there are always new kids at the beginning of each year. And there was one girl, and look, it might have taken me a few days. I think it was maybe 2 or 3 days, who was just shy. You know, you're shy, you're young. I was shy, you were shy.
Yeah,
we're both shy.
I was very shy.
I hid in the library most of my school
still
life.
Still am a bit.
Hid in the library my whole school life. It was obviously shy and sitting, eating her lunch on her own. And I obviously had been there for a few years, and I went to school with my twin sister. So I always had a friend. I was lucky. I always had a buddy and didn't have to experience life alone. I always had a backup. And I remember thinking I should go and sit next to her and ask if she wants to be part of our group. We weren't the cool group, but we were a few friends together. We were probably the nerd group. And I observed that, but I experienced it as her. I experienced how she felt in the moment that I included her. And I experienced the ripple effect that it had on her life. And when she went on to become prominent later in life in her work field, how she treated others. And then that effect, that ripple effect.
So you saw a projection into the future. Yeah. So her as an adult, and then from what I'm gathering from what you're saying, not just how your actions affected her, but the people that she went on to treat.
Yeah, it's actually, I'm going to explain it like this. It's like, take this moment as a bubble, okay? And it's played out like a screen, except for you're in it, you're observing it, and you're experiencing it as everyone, which is quite multi-layered and multifaceted. Yeah. But if you take it as a bubble, and then you see all the bubbles that are around it, meaning the effect on her future life, the effect on others, that how she will treat others, and that ripple effect in all these like bubbles, like all these little screens of like being able to just see. Consciousness is an amazing thing that it's very hard to understand it in. We can't understand that experience with our limited brains. It's to explain a near-death experience. Oh. Everyone I listen to now, and I didn't actually when I came back and I had the choice to come back, which is something I'll talk about. I didn't listen to a near-death experience, I think, for over a year.
Yep, Winnie's joined us, everybody.
Winnie wants to be on camera. You want to be on camera, sweetheart? I didn't read, didn't refer. I did not want to contaminate my experience until I had sat with it.
I think that's very wise.
Really, really sat with it and wrote my own notes of my experience and also integrated a little bit of it. And I'm continuing to do it now. What it means, how can this help us? How can it help me, and how can it help us all live a soul aligned life? Mm. There's so much power in an NDE for those of us that get to come back and share that experience. And I can't say what happens. So my NDE was a life review, and then my father sort of like, I won't say the next step, but it was more a transition of like prominence of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So while I had a life review with my guides, the prominence of their energy in that part was magnified. And then I would say that sort of, that energetically receded, and then my father's energetic prominence. And that's what I was referring to about familiar. My father was, as I remembered him when I was, photos that I'd seen of him as a younger man, as like when he was 35. He was 45 when I was born. I had never known him, but I had seen photos of him as this robust, healthy, 6'2", curly, wild curly hair. And that's how he was in my NDE. I have heard other people talking about when they meet deceased family, they tend to be younger and healthier and fitter. My father was 92 when he passed, but he wasn't like that. He was back to his healthy, vibrant state.
Yeah, they tend to present somewhere in the 30s at the height of their health and well-being. Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about NDEs, but he was that familiar. Having that aspect of familiar in an NDE, I think that matters and it helps. It's, and not only that connection of love.
Yeah.
Just that connection of love. It's, everything is love. It's quite, it's like saying everything in this room is alive with love.
Yeah.
Wow. Everything, every flower, every flower has the consciousness and can, the colours and the sounds are not what we hear or see here. That you can't explain them. I can't even show you a colour, different reds or...
So you saw colours that aren't on our spectrum here.
And I won't have a kind of a name for them, but it might be like 80 different shades of red, whereas I don't know how many we have here. I'm not an artist, really not an artist. You don't want me to draw. I feel that the familiar is important within the unfamiliar, but even the unfamiliar isn't. It felt familiar. It felt like home. It felt like home, even though it wasn't anything like the... Of course, it was like the physical reality, but it wasn't. It was way more amplified, way more magnificent. It was more love, more vibrant, more... I do struggle to find the words and the language to explain it. And you know, in our previous interviews, I do say I think I wish I had a whole new dictionary of words to describe this experience so that I don't come out clunky or do it an injustice. I often find myself thinking, I don't want to do this an injustice. When I was with my father, he was my mentor in life. And he taught me everything when I was studying cardiac medicine. He, years of helping me with my exams and working with him, and he loved teaching and mentoring as much as I loved learning from him. We had a beautiful relationship. I was really lucky to have had such an amazing, not only work relationship, but father-daughter relationship. And so it's really no surprise that he showed me something that within the NDE that was very much like our relationship was in human form, and that was to direct my attention or awareness onto consciousness. And I know that sounds like a really weird statement, and the only way I can explain it is as he would in life, say, hey, look at this, this is really cool. Like, look at this aspect of the heart, or if we do this, we can see this, or this unveils this about the heart. He was so excited about teaching anything to me. And it was like that. He was still like that. And he telepathically communicated to me much like that, to place my awareness in a distant, off to the right, in the distance, and to watch what happens when I place my awareness there, and was sort of the vein of, isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? Because what I saw was consciousness. I was co-creating with consciousness, with my awareness, and that my power of my awareness saw it unfold and expand. And at the time, of course, I'm just thinking, that is so amazing. I wasn't thinking about it in terms of, well, how does this apply back in the physical world? I've only just started thinking about a lot of these concepts recently, because they're quite in depth, and I've been unpacking a lot of other more personal lessons and insights before you get to those ones. I loved that how we were in our beautiful, loving, mentoring, father-daughter love. That's how we turned up for one another in that experience. Beautiful. And I think that familiarity was, it was lovely. I had the experience of his energy sort of receding again, and then my guides coming back more into prominence, and was telepathically communicated that I was to follow, go with into a space. And this is another thing to try and explain, that space and time do not exist as we understand it here. So there is no time continuum that I can say we would understand it was this amount of time in this place, so there's no point in me going, I was here for 10 minutes or I was here. That doesn't exist. It's not, there's no time as we look at it here or have it as a sequential, like a linear progression here. As is space here, we have a defined space, a physical and space of a room. There is a sense of space, but the definition is different. It's you can't define it by solid walls or the space that I was going into had the sense or feeling of a chamber, but I can't describe, like I really can't describe it to you. And it's much like I knew it was curved and I knew I went through a doorway, but it wasn't a doorway.
And this is where I struggle. I understand what you're saying, because you explained earlier how the communication is telepathic. So we could extrapolate that you were telepathically picking up and understanding that this was a chamber, this was a doorway.
I think that the understanding that while we are an individual soul consciousness, or we are in the illusion of individual here, you are you, I am me, and there is a separation. That's true. We are an individual soul consciousness, but you return to become part of consciousness, of one whole consciousness. So all of consciousness is available to you, whether it's a telepathic communication or knowing and understanding. It's all there. It's like, how did I not know all this? How did I forget all this? Or you don't question, you just not, you
That's
know.
That's another often reported common denominator in the near-death experience, this, you know, access to universal knowledge, which then disappears when you're back in the body.
And it is, and that's, I think, it's like that happened, like, I probably should go on, but as I came back into my body and you think, all that downloaded and all, for me, when I was coming back into my body, it was like just being plugged into this super highway of just, you see a lot of computer cables plugged in, and you know a lot of information's being fed into compute. It was like that, meaning I just felt like I was downloading a whole lot of information as I was falling back into my body. And now I know I've remembered maybe 5% of it, and that's so sad, because it's like remembering a dream where you catch bits and you know this bit and you know that bit, but you know there's a chunk in the middle where you go, oh, that was really important, and why can't I remember it?
And it's, why is that?
That amnesia of our coming into a limited computer system. Like, how can you, I feel, how can I process what would just blow the computer up? It's just too much. It's this limited computer system that we run in our brain. That's what I think. Mine might be a bit more limited than others. Maybe others are able to remember a lot more, but I know I'm missing bits, and that's really frustrating. It's really frustrating, because it's almost like it's just like that dream, it's just there, it's just out of reach, and it's so frustrating. But I did write what I could remember down about time and space, and the understanding of time and space and energy as unified fields, and how they co-create with one another, you know, the existence of them as like unified fields within interacting with one another, the understanding how I wrote it all down so I could explain it properly when I needed to. I don't know, even know why I thought I would be explaining it, but I found that notebook. I actually wrote it all out and put it away, and I found that notebook a few days ago, and I was like, that's where I put it all. And it was pages and pages and pages. And I haven't read it since probably 3 weeks after my NDE.
Oh, wow.
I know. It's really interesting reading back.
That sounds
really interesting. So I had time in a healing chamber where my three guides met me when I was entering the, I call it the love dimension. I don't know what else to refer to it, but that's how I refer to the dimension we go to, because it's love. It's the love dimension for me.
How beautiful. I love
and
that.
And we could call it heaven. We could call it,
the universe,
yeah. Source. I call it the love dimension. So in the healing chamber within the love dimension, I had my master guide and two other guides who knew me, knew everything about me, everything about this human life and all the ones before. And that is not saying I have any sway either way about any religion or any other religious beliefs. All I believe in is a divine love and consciousness that is that divine love. And yes, we have multiple lives. We incarnate for our souls to learn lessons that we can't learn when we are in this beautiful love dimension. We aren't living the human experience that gives us the opportunity to evolve our soul. And that's something that became very obvious to me in coming back, is why do we do this human experience? It's painful, it's suffering, but it's exquisite and it's magnificent, and we get to have beautiful connections and we get to eat beautiful food and we get to touch one, hug, connect.
You
swim.
Can't do that in the love dimension.
You're not physical.
Yeah.
You don't get to suck on a mango seed, or you do get to, my understanding, the fusion of energy, but that's not like hugging in physical form.
Mm.
And I think we come back to experience that time and time again, because it's quite exquisite what we get to do here. And I'm glad I got the choice to come back. It was after the healing chamber, which was a vibrational healing. And I think I've explained this in our interviews. I go way more in depth about my experience, and it takes a long time to go through it all.
Yeah.
And I don't want to bore everyone by going into every little detail, but it was a vibrational healing where I had my three guides and three other guides around me, and the healing went through my soul. A vibrational, like a liquid love. It was just
so
beautiful.
Goosebumps.
And then telepathically at the end, it was communicated, this is finished. And the next part was my father was back in more prominent energy and taking me to what I term the welcoming party, which was everyone I had loved in the life of Sarah, grandparents and friends, and all welcoming me. And it was like a celebration of my life, which, I don't know, sometimes we feel like there's not much to celebrate, or maybe I haven't achieved much, but celebrating love, just celebrating love and sending me love, like so much love. And I was proceeding deeper into that welcoming party as you would, I don't know, like walking down an aisle where there are people lined up, or down a street and there are people lined up either side, and you're walking down the center and you're progressing along. And as I was doing that, and just, it was like a magnificent reunion. It was lovely, a really, really lovely experience to see those that you have loved deeply.
Mm-hmm.
I hit a point that I would say I call a threshold. And I knew if I stepped over this threshold, and of course there wasn't a threshold, but there was an energetic threshold that if I went past it, I knew I no longer have a choice to come back to the life of Sarah, the life that I just left. And it's interesting because I wasn't in that whole experience thinking about, really, the life review, yes, but I wasn't thinking about the life that I had left behind. I really wasn't thinking about it at all. Or, I know it's weird to say thinking, but I wasn't, my awareness was not on what I had left behind.
Oh, the rain is hammering pouring. Down.
So it is pouring. I hope, I hope it's not affecting this.
Yes, you weren't thinking about thinking, other than your life
and
then you,
and it just,
wow.
It was like, it was forceful. It was like a force that just stopped me. And I was, my father was with me through the whole process. And I remember turning to him and communicating, if I keep going, does that mean I don't get to go back? And was, yeah, that you can go back to your body, back to that life, back to the sick body, back to the pain and suffering, which there will be more of, or you can stay here and you can keep coming, keep going on, and the choice is yours, and there's no right or wrong choice. There's no right or wrong. There's no judgment. There's no conditions here. It's, and it was instant. No, I want to go back to my children. I'm not ready. I'm not ready to leave my children. And at the moment I telepathically communicated no, and it, if it was in a voice, it would have been yelling.
Yeah.
It would have been yelling no. As soon as I communicated that, I felt myself falling really fast, like a roller coaster, and I hate roller coasters, really fast back to my body. And it was in that time that it was like I had been plugged in and everything was just filling my conscious awareness. And I was aware of past lives, just flicking through them and watching, like, aware of them. I've remembered a few of them now that I'm back, but I know I saw a lot more. And the interconnected thread of healing through them, and
of you as a healer in every lifetime, in some capacity.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it's fascinating.
That really struck me. So I remember that, watching different lives where that was the theme throughout all of them. In some shape or form, healing was in there.
Yep.
And then I was aware of the part of getting back into the body. And that's a really weird thing to say, I know, but as the energy left the body, for it to come back in, when it left, there's an expansion that I really wasn't aware of, that how light and expansive the soul consciousness becomes when it leaves the body, being back in the body. I was then aware of that contrast of how tight and heavy and dense and constricted I felt. It was just uncomfortable. I remember thinking, it felt like putting on really wet, tight jeans, or really, you know, just, yeah, not, it was just not nice and expansive and light and free. And I was aware of trying to breathe, which is another weird thing to say, considering I wasn't thinking about I'm not breathing. Well, you're obviously not, because you don't have a physical body to breathe when you're in the non-physical form. But I was struggling to breathe.
Yeah.
That, like, which woke my husband up.
Yeah.
And he immediately went to feel my pulse. And I guess after a year or a few years of me being quite sick, that was a natural thing that he had learnt to do.
Says a lot, doesn't it, about how you were all living at that time.
I haven't really thought about that statement to now. But needless to say, I was rushed back to hospital and got the experimental treatment that we were waiting for, and that put me in remission and gave me all this lovely health.
And I think an interesting thing that we can come back to in a future episode is, yes, you were, you know, you had access to this experimental treatment and gave you all of this beautiful life that you've been able to live since then. However, what part of your experience in the healing chamber, what was the weight of that in terms of, you know, and I don't think we've got time to go into it now, but let's come back to that in a future episode. Healing, your physical healing as well as
soul healing.
The soul healing and how that ripples out into our physical health.
I knew when I was downloading, when I was coming back into my body, it was communicated that I would be well.
Yeah.
Yes, I would come back to a healing or a process of back to health. But I knew the day after my first infusion, I said to my whole family, I feel so different. And now I know, in speaking with specialists, 8 weeks is what they say it takes for you to feel any effect. One day later, I felt really different.
See, this is really fascinating to explore. And we were talking about Anita Mujani earlier, who had also what could be termed a miraculous healing, a return from end-stage cancer. And your story has parallels, you know. And we've never really explored that, so I think it could be something interesting, given this weekend is apparently a very significant weekend in astrological terms.
You understand it more than I do.
Well, only I touched on this in our first episode too. There's always something going on astrologically when we film. But it's the new moon. It's the lunar new moon in February, and it's this planetary event with the asteroid Chiron, which is the archetype, represents the archetype of the wounded healer. So this time at the moment is all about acknowledging our wounds and stepping out into further growth. So it's quite an auspicious time for us to be recording our second episode. So Healing Chamber, I'd like to come back and talk about that. The fact that you had a choice, that's an interesting thing to explore in a future episode as well. And there was one other thing that occurred to me as you were talking, but there's so much, and we welcome your questions as well. So please just comment as to what you would like us to discuss.
I'm happy to answer any questions that I can. I don't think I know everything. No one does. I know what I've experienced.
Past lives, that was the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about those in an episode.
And it is interesting what I've now look at, what I've been drawn to in this life, and knowing how much it meant to me because of a past life. And I only understand that now because I've glimpsed that other life. And it was like, I'm going to show my age. When we were little kids, there were books that had like one line and then the next page had two lines. And as you flicked through them, you watched a story unfold. It was sort of like that. It's a bad example, but it was sort of like flicking through. Every page was a different life, flicking through it really quickly and getting a glimpse of it. But there was so much information held in that one page. And knowing so much about that life just from that glimpse and who the people were in this life, what roles they played in that life. And it was so interesting. Like I said, I'm so curious. And
well, I've always been curious about past lives too, and I'm sure that a lot of our audience also hold that curiosity. So I think we should definitely come back and explore that. And time as well. Time, I mean, we can come back and talk about time because obviously we refer to them as past lives. However, they're not past. They're all happening right now.
Yeah. Time's a real interesting one to get into because it's a little bit of a mind bender.
Yep.
It's probably going to become one of my favourite topics with awareness. The other thing that has probably struck me a little bit now that I've started talking about this a little bit more openly and is that the question of, and I'm going to have to address it because I get it so often, why didn't you meet Jesus? If you had a near-death experience, why didn't you meet Jesus? And my only answer is I had a near-death experience and I got to the threshold. What happens after that threshold, I can't tell you because I didn't experience it. I cannot tell you what the full death experience is because if I went over that, I wouldn't be back here talking about it. Mm. I don't know who you meet once you get over that threshold.
Mm. Yeah, so it's a very, very complex issue and I think you touched on earlier about you know, the immense variety of near-death experiences that there are. So Sarah was addressing the Jesus question because that came up particularly in comments in response to another podcast that Sarah did, which was viewed thousands of times, and that was one of the questions that was asked.
It was, I think it's reflecting. It's been a common one.
Yeah.
And so I've, in response to that, I'm respectful of everyone's beliefs and I'm of an understanding of how I experienced my NDE, of everything being one. That we are love. We are here to be love. And I am by no means sharing my experience to convince or to change anyone's beliefs or thoughts. My intent is one that I now understand intent matters more than anything. My intent is that we can help each other remember why we're here and remember who we are. And that is we're love and we're here to be love for one another. And that's really my message. Nothing more.
Thank you for wrapping that up so beautifully. I was going to ask you, what is your one key takeaway if you had to identify one from the near-death experience and you've answered that beautifully. So thank you, Sarah. And if you want to listen to more of Sarah's story, you can go to the three episodes that we have recorded together on the Spirit Sisters podcast and we will link to those below. And we also want to tell you about a very exciting thing that's happening in March, on the 16th of March, we are going to be having our first live event, Soul to Soul Conversations Live.
It's so exciting.
It's super exciting. Can't wait. We are going to be in the very beautiful region of Margaret River in Western Australia. Wow. So it's quite a trip for both of us. We're very, very excited. And we are going to be having a beautiful live event. There'll be a delicious grazing table and some refreshments and you've got us for 4 hours. So there's lots of talking and Q&A that's going to happen. It's going to be really special. So if you would like to learn more about that, please visit Sarah Jane's website, sarahjane.com.
It's actually on, that we'll put a link below.
We will put the link.
If we put a link below, that will take you directly to the Soul to Soul Conversations website, which has a live event. But we can put the link that just goes directly to the events page.
Yes.
Where you can just buy the tickets directly. I hope to see some of you there because we are really excited to do our first live event. And because this is on the other coast of Australia from where we live, our next one will be back closer to where we are and probably in Sydney somewhere. So we will keep you posted about future events. But this one, I think for our first one, will be really special.
It'll be intimate and we've got a lovely friend, Asta, who's helping us on the ground there,
organise everything. Thank you, Asta.
We're very, very grateful. So, yeah, as you can see, we're very excited to be kicking off Soul to Soul Conversations. And this is just the beginning. We've got so much in mind. So stay tuned. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, and we will see you next time on Soul to Soul Conversations.
Bye.
Bye.